North Georgia Business Radio presents the best of Business Radio X. Business Radio X serves as the voice of business in cities around the country, and every day, Business Radio X lets you hear from business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners, allowing them to share their stories of success. I'm Mike Salmon, and today on the show, we're going to share some of the conversations heard recently in our Business Radio X studio in Gwinnett County. Today on the show, you'll meet a new restaurant owner who does things a little differently. We'll also introduce you to a business attorney who will take the fear out of starting your own business. And later on, how technology is changing the world of private security. But up first, the holiday season brings us lots of wonderful family traditions, and for many, one of those traditions is to enjoy the Nutcracker Ballet. This year, as they have for many years before, the Nutcracker will be performed by the Gwinnett Ballet at the Infinite Energy Theater in Duluth. On a recent episode of Case in Point, which airs every Wednesday morning at 11:30 on Business Radio X, host Rick Strawn spoke with Amy Bray, a board member with the Gwinnett Ballet Theater.
Let me ask you a question. Who is Amy Bray? How did you get into all this and all the stuff that you do?
You've been dying to ask that. That's why
yes,
I'm here,
I
right?
Yes, I have. Yeah, absolutely.
I just have a lot of energy, and I have a lot of passion for both the community and for things that are creative. That's why I'm passionate about the ballet. I love a gorgeous ballet presentation. I love the costumes. I love what it takes for the lighting. I've played instruments, and so I love hearing someone play them really well, because I'm really not very good at playing them myself. When I look at the production of the Nutcracker that's going on, those kids are incredible.
Awesome.
These kids that graduate from Gwinnett Ballet Theater go on to some of the most amazing ballets. We've had folks go on to the Atlanta Ballet and the Houston Ballet and to the LA Contemporary Ballet and just these professional companies. So when you look at some of them, you forget you're looking at a high school kid. You're looking at a professional level dancer. And then there's the little kids who are just a hoot. Like, we feature children from ages 4 to 18. So you have four-year-olds that are dancing on stage as baby mice and getting a full live theater experience. We've had folks backstage that have worked in real live professional theater, and our productions are there. We have professional lighting and a professional orchestra led by a gentleman by the name of Predag Gosta, who's actually world-renowned, doing our live orchestra. And so I just sort of dived in and talked about that when you asked me about me, but right now, I'm just excited, and we're living this production. We're going into the final weekend, so there's still some tickets available, but usually the last weekend sells out. This is a tradition in Gwinnett. The ballet's been here for 37 years, or this Nutcracker, I should say. It's an annual performance every year at the Infinite Energy Center Theater. So we can watch that Nutcracker evolve, because every year there's just a little something different, you know? But it's by and large the same.
Well, your passion is just so obvious when you just listen to the tone in your voice, and I'm looking at you and I can see that it's just kind of bubbling over, but then you bubble over a lot with passion for just about everything that you do. Your production of the Nutcracker is notable for many things, particularly the professional sets and the lighting, and as you mentioned, the live orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
How does that all come together?
We have some amazing staff and volunteers. We hire a professional production manager. We have volunteers, some of whom have been with the theater for, you know, 17 years or more, or with the ballet theater for that long, and they know their stuff. But the majority of the people backstage are actually volunteers, parents or parents of alumni of Gwinnett Ballet Theater. And so when I'm talking about being passionate about it, I love watching people be passionate about things, and I get that energy from them and just spit it back. So I'll watch these parents leave it all on the stage for their kids to leave it all on the stage. So the production people at the end of the shows are always worn out from moving sets around. Like, it's controlled chaos behind the stage. Everybody's running around trying to fix costumes. And then out front, it's this gorgeous, just serene moments, or the little battle scene that's crazy. You don't think about how many people it takes to do that. There is a small army of volunteers behind the scenes every single performance.
We're so lucky here in the Gwinnett area. We've got the ballet, and we have Aurora Theater, And, you know, between those two venues, you've got just so much live entertainment that's offered, and it's all local. It's all local entertainment. And I know that watching these kids, especially the little ones, has just got to be an experience.
It's amazing. Well, and sometimes it's kind of tough because they're kids. But there's something that happens backstage, especially when they start getting 6, 7, 8. They get it. And they're so self-controlled, and they're so self-possessed, and you think about how much time they spend preparing. They've spent months. They auditioned back in August for their roles, and they've been working for months to this performance. Every year I see it, and they get back there. Even the new kids, like, they're just adorable, and they love it, but they have an exhausting schedule because most of them, I mean, they're all school kids. We have a lot of homeschool kids, but the majority of the children are either public school or private school kids, so they have a normal school schedule. And then they have dress rehearsals at night, and then they have the performances. And it's a lot to ask kids to do. And I think sometimes they hold up better than the parents. They hold up better than me.
That I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, they hold up better than me. My own daughter has 3 different roles that she's learned, that she's doing throughout this run. She knows how to do soldier captain, and Russian. So in any performance, she might do some combination of those roles, one or more. And I think about what it takes for me to memorize stuff. These kids are doing that constantly and mixing it up. And it's just astounding what they're able to accomplish.
Well, and it's also possible for the parents to get more involved, mm-hmm. and for other people to get more involved. Your husband, Cliff, I understand, had a rather interesting part in this ballet this year.
Most of the volunteering that we ask for is with production and costumes, and we need cast moms to be in the rooms to help with the girls. But we have a special thing about our performances. We invite someone from the community for every performance to be our special guest star, Mother Ginger. And I don't know how much the listeners know about the Nutcracker, but there's this role in the second act called Mother Ginger. She's in the land of the sugar plums. And she is a mama with a bunch of babies that she's very proud of, the Polichinelles. And this guest star is always a community person there. You have no dancing required. We load you into a rolling platform that looks like a giant hoop skirt, put makeup on you and a wig, and ask you to go on stage and from the waist up pantomime with your clown babies. Well, I had a moment looking at Cliff with the makeup on.
Well, he kind of likes the dress, I'm sure.
No. When you put that wig and that bodice, and it is hot. But he's a good sport, and he has so much fun with it. And he loves the Polichinelles are about 7 or 8 years old, those dancers. And there's a whole group of them. After you get loaded in, they get loaded in the skirt. And so the whole thing gets rolled on stage by the parents, by the volunteers, the stagehands. And they come out of the skirt 2 by 2 during the performance. And so up top, you have to act like, oh, these babies are coming out of a hidden part of my skirt, and you clap,
no,
and
I
you
love it.
Pantomime, and you act silly and try to get the crowd hyped. It's really about providing comic relief in the middle of a very serious ballet. Let's make people smile and laugh and give them some energy here with this upbeat performance. And we've had a stellar run of Mother Gingers this year. I mean, I love asking people to come do it. I love asking people who've never been outside their own box and gotten on stage before. They're fun.
I'll bet.
Because they'll get off the stage and they'll tell me how terrified they were, but how exhilarated they are. So yeah, so next year we're going to get you right.
Can you do something with the goatee?
Yes, I can.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Ha ha.
We'll talk. I've had someone trying to push me into that, so... You know, Christmas time has always been known for the Nutcracker Ballet. But it's awesome that we have it here, and it's awesome that the community participate. And I love it that our high school kids and middle school and the smaller kids all get to participate mm-hmm. and do their thing. It's awesome.
I love hearing about families that have been coming to this particular ballet for years, and it's their family tradition to have that experience. I love being part of something like that. That's like being part of a legacy.
I know you've got a spring show coming up.
We do.
And it's going to be an interesting one because it's got places for a lot of those young people to play, too. Mm-hmm. What would that be? Tell us about it.
It's Alice in Wonderland. Now, we haven't cast for it yet. We don't ever cast for it until we've passed the Nutcracker. There'll be a little rest after the Nutcracker run.
nobody needs that, right?
And then in January, we always start with an open house. And that's a great time for new students that want to come in and be part of the Gwinnett Ballet Theater and see what it's all about. And this year, it'll be January 6th. So come to our studios on McLeod Drive. It's right across the street from Gwinnett Tech. Actually, honestly, anytime someone wanted to check out the ballet, just contact us. We're always looking to welcome new students. We're not all shishy and snobby about it. We just love people who want to dance. But folks who start, you know, early in January with us will have the opportunity to audition for the spring show, and it's going to be Alice in Wonderland, and it will also, as plans are going, be at the Infinite Energy Center, so it'll be a professional quality production again.
Great.
So you get the real deal being on that stage. There's also a recital that will be in May, but the Alice in Wonderland's the big professional production for the spring.
And that's Rick Strawn and Amy Bray on Case in Point, presented by Paradigm Security Services. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, click on the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Case in Point. Coming up next, the skinny on a new restaurant that does things a little bit differently. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. When it comes to eating out, there are plenty of options to choose from. But if you're looking for something different, there's a new place called The Famous Toastery that opened recently in Suwanee. They're only open for breakfast and lunch, and on this week's Shut Up and Eat episode, owner Carice Moody explained to host Tom Voris how they like to do things a little differently.
The atmosphere, I'm going to say it's unique, and I know you'll explain this better, but it's not like you have a set wait staff. I mean, you know, it's pretty much everybody is taking care of everybody.
No, that's our motto, actually. Every server is your server. So you come in there, you're not just going to get one person's attention. You're going to get the entire store's attention.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that you are getting the full service, so to speak, from the time you walk in to the time you leave.
You've had this Famous Toastery now for how long?
A little over a year. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
You know, you run around like crazy. You're all over the place.
It is the best, worst diet you can ever come across. is better than exercise, better than CrossFit. Own a restaurant, you know, you're walking around the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, you were the head chef in the kitchen yesterday when I came by.
You know what? And I'm actually very proud of myself because in the last year, that's something that I have kind of picked up in my repertoire, so to speak.
Cool. Yeah, you like I said, you cover it all.
You have to. You have to be a jack of all trades.
Exactly. And I mean, what other better way to kind of get your staff to follow along is when they see that you're doing it all.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's a cool thing. What did you do prior to Famous Toastery? What were you famous at then?
You know what? I've been doing a lot of different things. As soon as I graduated from college, I worked in the orthopedic field doing clinical research, and then went back to school for finance and ended up working for Wells Fargo for about 2 years, and then transitioned into this field.
Okay.
So, I know.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with this. How did you go from Wells Fargo banking to a restaurant? I don't see the similarity.
The transition?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's like playing baseball with a volleyball, you know, it works. It just works for me. So my sister, she is my partner in this.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have another one there?
We do not.
Okay, this is it. This is like your first one.
This is our first one. We're rookies. We are rookies.
But first one because you do have visions.
Of opening up more. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I can see in your eyes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, my twinkle. It's a time of year, too, by the way.
Exactly.
You know, we really wanted to do something for our parents. I came up with an idea probably 4 or 5 years ago to find something that will work to help our parents retire sooner than what they are, their current timeline. And we looked into different ventures and whatnot, and we settled on franchising. And we wanted to get into a company that had a really good rapport with the people who buy into the company, that really do a lot of hands-on work with them. And Famous Toastery, by far and way, was the best one that we came across. I mean, the food is pretty good, too. So.
Oh, no, you got that. Yes, it
is. Yeah,
yeah. Now, where did Famous Toastery start?
Actually, North Charlotte, in Huntersville, originally. And then we relocated that Huntersville store to Davidson. And most recently, they just opened up a Huntersville store again back in Charlotte. I think right now, when we officially opened up, we were store number 23.
And you had a following because, I mean, no sooner did the doors open and bam, a lot of people came from North Carolina or drove through.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we tried our best to make sure that people knew what we were about, kind of build that buzz, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it had really worked well for us, but we still want to make sure, I mean, it's the American way, you always want more, right?
Right.
So you always want to make sure more people know about you, where we're located and whatnot, and go from there.
Now, Famous Toaster, did it start a year and a half? How long ago was it? You got into it in a year.
I got into it a year ago. Mm-hmm. Well, a little more than a year, because I did a little bit more research, because I had to find out the best location to put our first store. But the store overall has been around since, we'll say, 2005. We've been around a good little while. But we're still in our infancy phase, if you will, in comparison to the bigger type restaurants.
Yeah.
But we're catching our bearings. We're learning as we go, because trust me, and I know you know this, with any new business, there are some bumps and bruises and ups and downs and roller coasters, and we kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I have learned very quickly how to stand on your two feet and kind of take the punch and keep it rolling. My coach says you fake it till you make it. So even if you are having a bad day, you fake like you're having a good one until you actually have a great day.
Yeah,
and it works.
There you go. There you go. And one of my mottos used to be, the day's going to end at some point. I'm going to get through this.
The finish line?
Yeah.
You can see the light?
Yes, I will be done.
I love it. We open at 7, close at 3, so we have kind of different hours normal places, but as a repercussion of that, we get there really early. So we could be there on any given day, maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes a little bit later than that. It just depends on what is on our schedule. And we try to make everything from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're doing our grits, it takes us about an hour to do our grits. You can't rush stuff like that. You have to put the time in and go from there.
What else can you tell me about with Famous Toastery?
One of the things that we try to do is to make sure that the customers that come in there, they know that we don't have much of an ego. So if there's any suggestions that they have that they want us to do on the menu, we will absolutely try to do it as much as possible. But I think the blessing and curse for me is that I love to eat. And that it's a problem. I readily admit to that. But I hate cooking at my house. I absolutely hate cooking at my house. But I love going to the store, coming up with new ideas, and having my staff back there execute it, or having my staff come up with ideas of their own and see if that's something that we can execute and go from there.
So you have that freedom, even though, I mean, you're a franchise, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
But you have that freedom, basically, to think outside the box.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell people in our interviews, I don't want people to think inside the box. There is no box. We're blowing the box up. I want us to try new things. I like going to other places. I respect other restaurants and what they're doing, and see if I can kind of combine or build off of what they're doing as well, and see if I can put my own spin onto it.
Cool.
And kind of go from there. So our core menu is set, but our specialty menu we get to have a little fun with.
That's cool.
So that's where we get to flex our creative juices, so to speak.
Within reason, I'm sure.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, we can't go and fly out and get caviar, but
I was just going to say the same thing.
I want some caviar and crackers, please.
Okay, so we have our house roasted red potatoes. Okay. We mix that with our sauteed peppers and onions. We melt pepper jack cheese on top of that. Your favorite sausage gravy, which we make fresh every day. And then we put 2 eggs to your preparation on top of that, and then spicy chorizo on top of that as well. So it's a very hearty dish, to say the least.
So website is
FamousToastery.com.
And the address is?
It's 1120 Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, Suite 214, Suwanee, Georgia.
All right. And hours?
7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m.
And that's Carice Moody, the owner of the Famous Toastery, with host Tom Voris on Shut Up and Eat, presented by ChoicesToYou.com. To hear the entire interview, visit BusinessRadioX.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Shut Up and Eat. Stay tuned. Coming up next, how technology is helping first responders and private security firms keep us safer. And an interview with a local attorney who takes the fear out of starting your own business. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X, where we are sharing some of the on-air interviews from this past week. Technology seems to be changing how business is done in all fields, and that's true even in the private security industry. On a recent episode of Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan, which airs every Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, host Brian Mulligan discussed safety and technology with Rick Strawn, a former Atlanta police officer and the current owner of a private security firm, Paradigm Security Services.
The public sector in security is the police force. Why should you need private security at all if we've got a police force?
There's only a limited number of police officers. They are on calls. They're doing what police officers do, answering calls for service, handling traffic. But then you have a lot of calls and a lot of people that need private security around their place of business. Or let's just say, for instance, you have a major construction site. You can have the police officers out there directing traffic, and that's fine, because most many of the cities require that public entity to be able to do the traffic. But when it comes to private security on the job site, let's say somebody comes on the job site and wants to climb up on one of those cranes and decides to do the parachute jump without the parachute. Well, you know, police officers can't provide that security. They don't have the personnel. They don't have the time, to provide that additional security. When it's around a building and a concierge type thing, that's not what police officers do. So there are many facets of security and security actions that are just not designed for a public police department where the city or the county or the federal government or someone like that is paying for it.
I suppose the way to look at it is that the function of the police department would be law enforcement. But the whole business of preventing crime, keeping your assets secure as a business, and that's a private sector thing, because that, as opposed to calling in the police just when something goes wrong.
Absolutely. If you want, police to a certain extent provide a little bit of a deterrence through patrols. But if you really want to provide a deterrence, you've got to have almost reality, you got to have basically a 24-hour presence, or at least the presence when there's no one there to where somebody can see it, because crime is a convenience thing. And if you've got a security officer there and you've got the criminal that comes up to the property, if he sees a property with a security officer, he does not want to go to jail. So he's less likely to come onto that property than he is to go to another, rather just go to another property that doesn't have any security, and then there's very little chance of him going to jail.
Do you find it an easy partnership with the police force, or do you see sometimes that it's a bit adversarial about what's your side of the line and what's their side of the line?
That's a good question. I look at it as, for instance, the name my company came from, Paradigm. In 2001, 9/11, when we had the towers hit, the paradigm of security completely shifted.
Wow.
You had your definitive law enforcement, and you had your security. Police officers just looked at it as security guards, get out of my way. If you don't get out of my way, I'm going to put your butt in jail, that type of thing. But now it's gotten to where private security has come so far in the training that we've got to do that many of us choose to do in our companies. We have our own. But the main thing is when you have this call for a need for a first responder, more often than not, that first responder may very well be private security now. The reason for that being, they're the first ones on the scene. You've got to be trained well enough to be able to know what's going on, be able to know what to do, know how to react. And you better be able to, in certain cases, take out that issue. And police officers, God bless them, it's going to take most of the time 3 to 5 minutes or longer to get to a scene. And by then, a lot of action is already over with, a lot of people are already hurt. There's just a lot going on that once that happened, we all started looking at each other a little differently. I prefer that police officers look at my people as, well, that's Paradigm. We know who they are. They're trained. We know what their owner does or has done. They cut a lot more slack with security and private security now than they used to.
Are there any standards involved? In other words, training, or is it left up to the private, you as a company, to decide how well your people are trained? I could imagine if you're in an active shooter situation or responding to something like that, let's say your competitors weren't trained and you were trained.
That's an edge.
Yeah, it's an edge, but are there some standards that you have to comply with, or some tests that you have to pass? How does it all work?
Well, the Secretary of State's office is who regulates the security, private security industry. And they have a 24-hour, they don't have a class for 24 hours, but they have the parameters that you have to set your 24-hour class up to include certain areas, such as the powers of arrest and, you know, liabilities. And there's just a lot of stuff there for they require 24 hours. But 24 hours in and of itself is just a very small, that's the mandatory minimum.
Okay.
And if you do a mandatory minimum, you are not well trained enough to be able to handle a lot of situations. 3 days, 8 hours a day in a classroom, that's about as minimum as you can get. It makes you legal, but it really doesn't give you the training that you need. So if you're smart, you develop other modules, other training, more extensive training on the terrorism, on workplace violence, active shooter. You go through a lot of training that you offer your people and get them in that's in addition to that.
Are you seeing technology moving into your space? I mean, my image of a security guy is a guy with a radio, and that's about the extent of the security. Are you seeing technology moving into your industries?
We have a lot of technology that's come into the security world. One of the things is we used to have little watch clocks that you walked around and you clocked in and all that. We've got smartphones now that have apps that have the clock ins, that have the points. You can incorporate so much in digitally to be able to send it to your clients so that they know what's going on their sites. They know where the officers are. We can track them. They've got GPS in them. There's so many of that stuff. But then, like for active shooter, there's new technology coming out that it's a monitoring system for audible as well as video so that you can actually see what they're doing while they're doing it and have a command center. There's just that technology now for active shooter. The whole idea being eliminate that issue as quickly as possible and decrease the loss of life.
And again, an interesting parallel with our world in transportation, because what we use the term of everything connected to everything changes everything.
Absolutely.
And what you're describing is all your security guards are all connected to each other, to the control center. And previously, we used to make decisions based on some of the people knowing some of the things some of the time. And now you're in a situation with everything connected to everything, where everybody can know everything all the time. Okay, I just wanted to ask you, we're coming up on the holiday season. Have you got any suggestions for us in this as we come up to this holiday period regarding security?
One of the main things is a lot of people do a lot of shopping. They're always out there going to the malls, going to different places. Take care and pay attention to what's going on around you. There's a lot of people out there now that are watching. Don't take your packages out. Put them in your car. And even if you put them in your trunk, the bad guy's watching. They can get in those trunks. There's so much technology now that I saw something the other day where they locked their car, and when they turned around, it unlocked. The smart thing to do, which is what they did, is they got in their car and immediately left. Pay attention to what's going on around you is probably the best advice that anybody can give. Be with other people. Don't be alone.
And that's Brian Mulligan and Rick Strawn on Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan on Business Radio X, presented by Applied Information and the Travel Safely app. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan. Coming up next, you'll meet a local attorney who explains how a good corporate lawyer can take your business to the next level. This is North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Every week, Stephen, Julian, and I host a show on BusinessRadioX.com called Gwinnett Business Radio, where we have the pleasure of meeting and interviewing business leaders in our area. This week on the show, we spoke with attorney John Monahan, a partner with Trusted Counsel, an Atlanta law firm that specializes in corporate law.
Well, Trusted Counsel is a corporate and intellectual property law firm. So we focus on the legal needs of primarily middle market companies. We also represent some Fortune 500 companies. But what we try to do is we try to provide substantive, practical knowledge to businesses.
How long have you guys been in business?
We've been in business since 2005.
Okay. Talk about your background and how you got to where you are today.
I've been in corporate law my whole life, and actually everybody at our firm, we don't do any litigation. We only focus on corporate law, and corporate law is really the needs of businesses. So a lot of people think about this. We're talking contracts, mergers and acquisitions, investments, things like that. My background is I went to law school at University of South Carolina, also completed my MBA there. After that, I knew that I wanted to go in and do some serious corporate and business law, so I came to Atlanta. That's where all the business in the Southeast is. And so I've been at Trusted Counsel since 2009, and I'm a partner there. We have four other partners and 10 employees.
I think when people think about corporate law, a lot of people think about, well, I got to talk to a lawyer about setting up my LLC. I got to talk to a lawyer about these contracts. And you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other things that, especially the small and medium-sized business owner that maybe has only been in business a few years, isn't thinking about why they would need some trusted counsel for some other things that are not your standard practices?
Right. Perfect question, because that is how a lot of people think of us. And certainly we provide those services. But those services are something that really starting a business in the typical sense can be as easy as going to the Secretary of State. So what we focus on is something that is a little bit higher end. So imagine that you're a business. At first, maybe you don't want to spend legal costs because you don't really have much of a business to protect. But as you grow and you start making money, you actually have something. And like anything in this world, you want to start spending some money to make sure that it's protected from outside forces. And also, you're thinking about scaling at that point. Your life gets harder. You're now, you know, we focus on businesses primarily in the $5 to $20 million range. That's what we consider middle market for revenues. But you're now getting employee issues because now it's not just four of you in the office. It's 20 of you in the office. You need employee manuals. You have someone who needs to be terminated. You have a big contract with Home Depot here in town. You've developed some intellectual property. These are all things that now you need to think, well, how am I going to protect that? How am I going to monetize it? And one day I want to sell this business, and what's the best way to do that?
If I'm one of those middle market companies doing $5 to $20 million a year, I wish. Then we'd be having more than just cherry cola.
It wouldn't be Fentimans cherry cola that I'd be giving
exactly.
you, I tell you that.
If I'm one of those companies, how do you engage with those companies?
The answer with most attorneys is it depends, right?
That is a classic
right.
attorney answer.
You could never get a straight answer. Most times what happens is it starts off as a single engagement. We have to earn people's trust like anybody else, and they usually have a problem that they have encountered. Either they have no legal counsel, and so they get referred to us by maybe an accountant or someone else who in a position of trust, or you know they have an attorney, but they've been a very general attorney that doesn't really focus on these sort of complex issues. So we take that issue on. It's normally an hourly engagement because it's usually pretty complex, and we don't know how long it'll last. We certainly have some people that have monthly retainers mm-hmm. with us, and we work that way. And also for some things which we can easily predict what the price is going to be, we flat fee engagements.
We're speaking with John Monahan from Trusted Counsel here in the Atlanta area. And John, I'm going to tell you something that I think you know, but just in case you don't, you're not the only law firm in the metro Atlanta area.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, you're working on that. But
right. Why don't you just tell them that there's no Santa Claus, my goodness.
And one of the things we said, we were talking off air, we were kind of asking about the name, and a lot of law firms use the many names of all the partners, and you guys went with a little bit of a branding in your name with Trusted Counsel. So that's one thing that makes you unique. What are some of the other things that makes your firm unique?
I think that we are one of the few firms. We consider ourselves a boutique firm. And really, there's few firms in town that have the expertise that we have in the corporate matters, you know, primarily let's say, venture capital, raising, financing, mergers, acquisitions, and just intellectual property protection and technology licensing. Normally, if you want that, you may have to go to a larger firm. That creates another set of complexities, because at a larger firm, perhaps they're looking at a much higher range. And so maybe your needs are not being met. Maybe you're not getting the type of client interface that you want with your attorney. You know, we really focus on having a relationship with our clients. And what we try to do is we try to be very practical and strategic, and we also try to teach them. That's one of our biggest goals that I think differentiates us, is we don't try to keep the law a secret or in a black box. We actually want our clients to learn what it is so that they can sort of help themselves, but also primarily spot issues and come to us when they need our help, but do what they can on their own when we're not needed.
John, I want to ask you to do a little education for that listener who, again, is in that middle market. They've used their attorney for a couple of things, but they're starting to scale. They're starting to their business is starting to change and be more profitable. And I want you to focus on the term intellectual property. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned that a few times. And I think some business owners might be like me. Now, most of them are smarter than me, but they might be like me and thinking, well, intellectual property, well, I don't have a patent. I don't have any kind of secret formula or anything that I got to protect. Go beyond just the obvious thing of intellectual property. What are some of the things that a business owner might not think is intellectual property that they need to be protecting?
Great question. One, I am going to, even though you said go beyond the obvious, I am going to do one obvious
one. You're allowed?
Because it turns out that it's not obvious, which is, if you help someone develop code, let's say someone develops a computer program for you and they are an independent contractor, that person, even if you pay them, owns the rights to that unless you have a written agreement saying that you own it. And I see this come up over and over again with people that are developing some technology for their company, or even, it doesn't even apply to technology, websites, other things. And so that's one. The second thing on intellectual property is we're really talking about trademarks, trade secrets, copyrights, and patents. But a lot of people do not know that they can register their name. You know, they might think of it, but they should really think, well, what's our name? How can we protect this on a federal level? The other day, I had a furniture company that was thinking about patenting some designs. You know, that's something that someone might not consider. There are things, there's trade dress protection, in which, let's say, a bottle. This is not such a unique bottle, but the Coke bottle.
Right.
You can actually protect that under trade dress law so that nobody can make a Coke bottle that looks like the Coke bottle. So there are second level protections which are not obvious until you talk to someone who's knowledgeable in the trade, and then they can say, have you ever thought about protecting this and excluding everybody else from the market from using it? And that can be a great competitive advantage.
Trusted counsel, John Monahan. For those that would like to find out more about your services, more about your firm, where can they go?
They can go to www. Put in trusted-counsel.com or email me at jmonahan@trusted-counsel.com. Monahan spelled M-O-N-A-H-O-N.
I'm surprised people still say the W's when they give their websites. We get that all the time.
I'm embarrassed to do it.
John, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Mike, before we go on, I just want to remind you that even though it was the least I could do, the reason I brought you a Christmas gift is because I love working here at Business Radio X.
Yes. that was dramatic pause
that
there.
Was.
Let that sink in for a while, because I'm trying to figure out if you're serious or being sarcastic.
No. I do love working here. And love is also what makes a Subaru. Get big savings and enjoy a hassle-free experience at Subaru of Gwinnett, where people sell cars. Visit SubaruGwinnett.com and join their family today. Come in and see the difference. Maybe like Mike, you're already a Subaruist. Then follow Subaru of Gwinnett's Facebook page for the latest Subaru offers, news, and community events.
And that's just some of Gwinnett Business Radio from this past week on Business Radio X. If you want to hear more of that interview or check out any of our past shows, which includes over 5 years worth of shows with hundreds of interviews of the top local business leaders and executives, go to businessradiox.com, click on the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Gwinnett Business Radio. There's a good chance we've interviewed somebody you know. Well, that's it for now. Business Radio X lets you hear from the top business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners in our communities, allowing them to share their stories of success. Today's interviews were just a few of thousands from around the country that you can hear anytime 24/7 by visiting the voice of business,
businessradiox.com. Until next time, I'm Mike Salmon, and this has been North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X.